Toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham Holidet Yitzchak. And these are the offspring of Isaac, the son of Abraham. Abraham begot Isaac. OU Israel presents... Welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Shabbat Parshat Toledot. Recording and first availability, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the first day of Kislev 5777, also known as Rosh Chodesh Kislev, corresponding this year to December 1st. Note, Kislev 1, December 1. The 29 days of Kislev will match in date number to the 29 days of December. And when we get to the 30th of December, that'll already be the first of Tevet, and we're off. But the matchup that takes place this year, 2016, between Kislev and December, last time that happened was 1978. 1978, 88, 98, 08. And 8 is 38 years ago. that number is not a regular number for this happening, because sometimes it just misses and it goes longer and different factors. But that's the fact for those who like calendar trivia. The last time any 2 months were matched up was ER 5774 with May 2014. And that's the way it goes. Jewish months are 29 or 30 days, which makes them roughly on average 29 and a half. Secular months are, or general calendar months, solar calendar months, at 30 or 31, which averages out to 30 and a half, approximately. I say approximately because February has only 28 and sometimes 29, but there are more months with 31 than there are with 30. So roughly the average is 30 and a half, which means that the Jewish calendar, each month is one day shorter than the solar calendar. And that will create a situation where roughly in 30 months, you come back to matching the numbers. And roughly, enough said on that. Let us say Tehillim Kuf Kaf Aleph, Psalm 121. Which is what we say when we don't say Tachanun, and in Rosh Chodesh, we don't say Tachanun. Shir lama'alot, esa einai el heharim, me'ayin yavo ezri. Ezri me'im Adonai, osei shamayim v'oretz. Al yitain lamot raglecha, al yanum shomerecha. Hine lo yanum v'lo yishan shomer Yisrael. Adonai shomerecha, Adonai tzilecha al yad yaminecha. Yomam ha-shemesh lo yakecha v'yoreach balayla. Adonai yishmorcha mikol ro yishmor et nafshecha. Adonai yishmor tzeitecha uvoecha me'ata v'yad olam. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara uvashivya ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha. Hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha u'meyafela l'ora u'mishibud l'geula hashta ba'agala u'vizman kariv v'nomar amen. Okay, before we get into Toledot, let's take the opportunity of Rosh Chodesh to review the Jewish calendar. I tend to get carried away on it. I'll try not to. It's one of my favorite topics. But it's good to know about it. I believe, by the way, that the command, the very important command, the very first command to the people of Israel, still in Egypt, through Moshe and Aharon, was HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim. This month that you're coming out of Egypt, Nisan, will be the first of your months of the year. And from there, we are taught the mitzvah of setting a calendar. A nation has its own calendar. That is a very crucial aspect of nationhood. And that's an important mitzvah. Now, the primary responsibility of fulfillment of the mitzvah are not each individual Jew, but the representatives of the Jewish people, in the first case, Moshe and Aharon, and in from that point on, the Sanhedrin, the Supreme Court of 71. The Sanhedrin is in charge of the two aspects of the Jewish calendar and the, let's call it, modified version of it when we don't have a Sanhedrin, also came from the Sanhedrin. So what about the rest of us who are not members of Sanhedrin? I am a firm believer, based on the fact that the Torah's 613 mitzvot were given to all the Jews, and among them are mitzvot that individuals will never have to fulfill. There are mitzvot for Kohanim, there are mitzvot for non-Kohanim. You either are or you're not. There are mitzvot for kings, there are mitzvot for prophets. There are mitzvot for Sanhedrin, courts. And yet, each unit that has its own mitzvot, we're not handed a book, a scroll of mitzvot for themselves, separate from what other groups got. The entire Jewish nation stood at Har Sinai to receive all of the Torah. What that means on a practical level, I think, is that every mitzvah at least requires our study, knowledge, and interest. So, specifically to the Jewish calendar, I believe that even though you could walk into a bookstore and buy a calendar for the year, all kinds, calendar for 10 years, 20 years, 120 years, 200 years, there are computer programs which you can generate calendars for any year that you want. It's still, I hate to use the word behooves us, because I never use that word, sort of a word you see written but you don't say it. It's appropriate for us to know the Jewish calendar. I said I'm not going to get carried away. I'm going to try to keep that in mind. But I've always said to groups when I talk about this topic, I start by saying 30 days hath September, April, June, and November. What about Tammuz? What about Kislev? What about Adar? And it usually makes the point that we Jews from Anglo countries, English speakers, are more familiar with the secular calendar than with the Jewish calendar. Obviously, we know about Chagim, the holidays, but there are many, many Jews, including religious Jews, who do not know their Hebrew birthday. They come a little bit embarrassed to say, I was born in such and such a year, on such and such a date. Can you tell me my Hebrew birthday? And there are programs for that. But it's important that a Jew knows the calendar. I was influenced a long time ago by Rabbi Elihu Marcus, Zichrono Livracha, in a talk that he gave at a Rosh Chodesh dinner, that we in Israel should use the Jewish calendar as much as we can. And he encouraged us, and something that I've been doing for well over 30 years, is to date checks according to the Jewish calendar. You can't really do that outside of Israel, but it is perfectly legal to do it here. Banks follow the secular as well as the Jewish calendar, and that's the way it works. In all the years, I was only challenged twice. Once by a person who looked at the date and said, "Is that today?" Meaning, are you postdating the check? I said, "No, that's today." And the other time was a non-Jewish gas station attendant who said, "You can't do that. You have to write the date." And I said, "Yes, I can do that." And he sort of dismissed me and pulled out a pen and wrote the secular date right near the Jewish date that I had written. I once got in trouble for it. I dated a check on Rosh Chodesh something, and my resh was a little curved at the bottom, and the bank read it as a kuf. Kuf Chet instead of Resh Chet for Rosh Chodesh. Kuf Chet is the 28th of the month, and they bounced it because it was post-dated. So after that, I started writing an Aleph instead of Rosh Chodesh, so it's clear what day of the month it is. Anyway, I digress. But I don't really digress because I think it's important that we should know this. Now, in the time of Sanhedrin, past and future, the month was declared by the head of the Sanhedrin on a month-to-month basis. We were not totally in the dark about when Rosh Chodesh would be, but in many months there was a question, would it be today or possibly tomorrow? And that's because the head of the Sanhedrin acted upon the, let's call it, recommendation of the committee for the determination of the calendar, who relied by Torah law on witnesses who would come and testify to the first visibility of the lunar crescent. The problem with that is that you get a cloudy night, and even if the moon is visible, you don't see it. All right, let me cut it down. I always do this when I talk about the calendar. The fixed calendar that we use today without a Sanhedrin is mathematically developed to have months that are either 29 days or 30 days. They alternate from Tishrei through Elul, but there has to be a minor adjustment because the average time it takes the moon to go through its phases is a little bit more than 29 and a half days. It's 44 minutes plus a couple of seconds longer than 29 and a half. 29 and a half would allow perfect alternating of 30 and 29 days. Okay, the fine adjustment is made with the months of Mar Cheshvan and Kislev. Mar Cheshvan usually has 29 days, as it does this year. Occasionally it has 30 days, as it did last year. Kislev usually has 30, and in some years, like this one, it has only 29. So both Mar Cheshvan and Kislev have 29 days. The significance of that is that the Rosh Chodesh of the following month is sometimes one day when the preceding month is 29 days, and sometimes 2 days when the preceding month is 30. So Kislev turns out to be the most flexible of the Rosh Chodeshes. And just as a trivia point, the only day of the week that's never Rosh Chodesh Kislev turns out to be Shabbat. The other 6 days of the week, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, can be one of the days of Rosh Chodesh, some of them both, either. And bottom line, this year we have one day Rosh Chodesh today, and that's it, because Mar Cheshvan had 29 days. Sorry, I got carried away and then ended up not being clear about it. I want to introduce another topic before we get into Parshat Toledot, and that is based on a Mishnah in Masechet Ta'anit, which tells us the following. One second. Here we go. The Mishnah in Ta'anit begins with telling us that we begin referring to God as the rainmaker on the last day of Sukkot, the day we call Shmini Atzeret, and in Israel it's also Simchat Torah. Then the Mishnah tells us that we don't ask for rain until the rainy season. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, that's different. Okay, one second. On the 3rd of Mar Cheshvan, we ask for rain, which we don't. Rabban Gamliel is the one who says on the 7th of the month, 15 days after the holiday, and it's sort of an anachronistic reason about people who came to Jerusalem for the holiday, how long it would take them to get back before we start asking for rain. Bottom line, we've been asking for rain in Israel with the words V'tein Talu Matar Livracha since the 7th of Cheshvan, Mar Cheshvan. The Mishnah continues, Higia Shiv'asar B'Mar Cheshvan V'lo Yardu Geshamim. If 10 days pass and it's the 17th of Mar Cheshvan and it has not rained yet, Hitchilu Hayechidim Itanin Shalosh Taniyot. Individuals, not the community, individuals would accept upon themselves to fast 3 fast days, which is always a Monday, Thursday, Monday. And the Mishnah describes the level of the fast, eating and drinking at night. During the day, obviously no eating and drinking. Work is permitted, bathing is permitted, lotions and cosmetics, wearing of leather shoes, marital intimacy are all permitted. The only thing is no eating and drinking on each of these 3 days individual. This is the reason that I'm bringing this up now. Next Mishnah, first chapter, Mishnah 5. Higia Rosh Chodesh Kislev. If it comes to Rosh Chodesh Kislev, that is today, V'lo yardu geshamim, and it hasn't rained, then the Beit Din, the court, will declare a 3-day fast on the community. And it's not an option, it's an imposed fast, which the Beit Din had the power to do in order to pray for rain. The Mishnah continues, what happens if it continues not to rain? But that's not my point. The reason I'm bringing this up is that we are having rain today. We've had 1 or 2 sessions of rain much earlier. It has not rained a lot. In fact, we had a lot of problems with the fires last week because everything was dry. But today it turns out that it's raining. I would not call it a heavy rain yet. But we have rain in Yerushalayim, and hopefully other parts of the country are also experiencing their first decent rainfall of the season, and just in time, Rosh Chodesh Kislev. So put that in your pipe and smoke it. Here is a track called Yehi HaChodesh Hazeh. It's a blessing for the coming month, and since we're on Rosh Chodesh, it's appropriate, and after that, we'll talk about, finally, the Sedra of the Week, Parshat Toledot. Chodesh Hazeh, Kinevu Asavich HaYizeh.
Isha Mother Vaise, Kurs of Sunday Cossing Fly.
Yeah, Achide Shaza, Kid, and Wasavi Kaita. Isha Mother Vaise, Kurs of Sunday Cossing
Parsha of the week begins with telling us that Avraham sired Yitzchak, and this is the story of Yitzchak, the son of Avraham. Torah makes a point there because scoffers questioned whether Avraham really fathered a child at age 100 and whether Sarah had a baby at age 90. And they scoffed and said they found a baby and they claimed it as their own. So Sarah was given the ability to not only nurse her own child, but to nurse other children as well, to show that she had miraculously returned to the anatomy of a younger woman. And Avraham, who couldn't prove it in the same way, so our sources tell us that Yitzchak was the spitting image of his father Avraham, and there was no doubt that he was the baby's father. Now, the beginning is sort of 20 years after the marriage. At the end of, not in the end, towards the end of Chaya Sarah, we had, after Eliezer's successful foray in Aram Naharayim, bringing Rivka back to Yitzchak, and Rivka fills the void left by the death of Sarah Imenu, not just for Yitzchak, but for all of Klal Yisrael, you could say. And that's where we left off there. Here the story picks up that they were married. Yitzchak was 40 years old, and this is now 20 years later. 20 years of not having a child, 20 years of Rivka being barren. And they pray. She gets pregnant, but there is turmoil in the pregnancy. She does not have an easy time of it, and the Torah tells us that she goes to consult with God. Consulting with God meant going to the prophet at the time, or the most connected person at the time, which was Shem, the son of Noach, who outlived Avraham, as a matter of fact. And his answer from God to Rivka is, you have twins, and they will develop very different personalities and an antagonism of one to the other, which is why you're feeling that turmoil even from the womb. And she questions, you know, what does she need it for? But then they're born, Esav first, followed by Yaakov, and Esav is described as an ish sadeh, a man of the field, a hunter, and Yaakov develops into a ish tam, yoshev ohalim, a gentle person who is more of the tent dweller and scholarly Torah studier. Yitzchak favors Esav because Esav either feeds him or deceives him, or both. And Rivka unconditionally loves Yaakov. Then you have the famous episode of Yaakov cooking up a lentil stew, and Esav comes back from the field and he's exhausted, and he asks, give me some of that red stuff, and Yaakov does, and they also contract that Esav would turn over the first birthright to Yaakov, and Esav basically had the attitude of who needs it. Now the Torah takes a break in the story of Yaakov and Esav, which will resume in a while, still in this Sedra, but not until Yitzchak is elderly and blind. But in the meantime, you have an episode, exactly when it occurred, I can't say, of a famine hitting the land, just like the famine from the time of Avraham. And it seems that Yitzchak might have been heading towards Egypt as Avraham had done, but God stops him and says, do not go down to Egypt, dwell in this land that I have told you, Gur Ba'aretz Hazot, and I will be with you and bless you. Ki lecha ulezaracha etein et kol ha'aretzot ha'el. I will give you all of these lands for you and for your generations, your offspring, and I will uphold the pledge that I made to your father Avraham. So Yitzchak settles in Gerar. Now there, a similar episode takes place to that which happened twice with Avraham, and that is, they ask, and who is this beautiful woman with you? And he says, she's my sister, because he was afraid to say she's my wife, because of a fear that they would kill him in order to take her. Different from what happened with Avraham is that Rivka is not taken from them. They're living in Gerar, and Avimelech, the king, sees something in their behavior, in what they thought was in private, which indicates that they are not brother and sister, but they are husband and wife. And he challenges Yitzchak for it. And Yitzchak says, I was afraid because there's no God, fearing of God in this place. And Avimelech sort of is hurt. And they make a pact. And there's a whole business with digging wells in the same wells that Avraham had dug, and finding new wells and being kicked out and coming back. I don't want to get involved in all of that. Yitzchak is very successful at this time, and he flourishes. Then he goes back to his previous residence in Beersheba, and the next scene takes place. A quick note is made that Esav, at age 40, just like his father, took a wife of Yehudit, the daughter of Be'eri Hachiti, and Bosamat Bat Elon Hachiti, and both of these wives were reviling, I don't know if that's the right word, to Yitzchak and to Rivka. But that's all the Torah tells us at that point. Now, before we get into the business of the blessing, the fact of the matter is that most of the information we have on Yitzchak's life and his behavior is very much a copy, and the Torah makes a point of saying that, of Avraham's. He dug the wells that his father had dug. He made a treaty with Avimelech like his father had done. And he was hit by a famine like his father was. And he went to Gerar like his father did. And a lot of similarities like that, to the point where some people point out that Avraham was a very unique personality. Yaakov, Yitzchak's son, was very unique and did all kind of different things. But Yitzchak was more of a copy of his father than his own person. Now, it's possible that we could go through in great detail and find out that he really was his own person, and I have no doubt about that. But I think it's very important to understand why it's important that Yitzchak was very similar to Avraham, because their backgrounds were not similar. Avraham was an idol-worshipping child of an idol-worshipping family in an idol-worshipping culture and society. And he made the discovery or the rediscovery of belief in one God. And he took it on with a passion, and he preached it to other people at great risk to his own life, since in those days, paganism was the way to go, and made a name for himself, and among other things, had a child at an advanced age called Yitzchak, who did not grow up in an idol-worshipping family. He grew up in the home of the two premier Jews of all time, Avraham and Sarah. And the fact that he did similar things in an economic sense and maybe in other areas as well is to show us the need for a strength in continuity, that Avraham was the first link in a chain, but that Yitzchak was very crucial because he needed to carry on the mantle of Avraham without having the challenging life that his father had had. It's today like Balei Tshuva, people who become religious as adults, whose children are born into a religious home. And it's very difficult, or it's not to be assumed, that a child growing up in that atmosphere of a religious home will develop the same passion for religion that their parents did, because their parents took it on themselves as a free will choice. Sadly, there are many, many FFBs, that's what they're called, from birth, kids that grew up in a religious home, and the excitement is missing. It's not a personalized thing. It's just been there, did it, always done it, continue to do it maybe, and then if they challenge, they challenge. But they don't have that sparkle and twinkle in the eye and that overwhelming feeling in their heart that the new life that they have chosen from themselves, talking about the parents, Baal Tshuva, is something that that's very precious to them. So in Yitzchak, we maybe see a carbon copy of Avraham, not in his background, but in the way that he turned out and his qualities and traits and characteristics. And it's very reassuring for us that we're not necessarily dealing with a totally different personality. We're dealing with a strong-willed person who continues the tradition of his father. And that's an essential element of our chain of tradition. Then we have the episode of the blessing. The Torah tells us that Yitzchak was elderly and his sight failed, and he calls to Esav, his son, his older son, and tells him to please go out and hunt his favorite food and prepare food for him to eat, so that he will be able to receive a blessing in the context of that meal. When Yitzchak is out, Rivka, having heard Yitzchak sending Esav, quickly tells Yaakov to get two goats and that she will prepare a meal that will taste like the meal that Esav would bring back from the field. And Yaakov will disguise himself and present himself before his father so that he, rather than Esav, can receive this blessing. Now, I don't have the time to go into all of this, but you have to see a startling fact here. Rivka commanded Yaakov to do as she told him. There are some that actually suggest that she was guided by a form of prophecy, or certainly by Ruach HaKodesh, a Holy Spirit, to do what she did to acquire Yitzchak's blessing to Yaakov rather than to Esav. On the other hand, Yaakov was definitely subjected to punishment for this deception, and it is startling in how obvious it is, because the main deception that Yaakov, with Rivka backing, perpetuated on his father involved a goat and a coat. Rivka dressed Yaakov in the garments of Esav, and she prepared a meal of goat meat. And years later, Yosef's brothers, Yaakov's sons, perpetuated a deception on him of a very terrible kind, where they brought Yosef's coat dipped in the blood of a goat and said, "Recognize this. Is this your son's or not?" Presenting Yaakov with evidence that Yosef was dead, even though Yaakov refused to believe it, and even though in fact it wasn't true. This is what Yaakov suffered from in his lifetime. The best answer, if you call it that, that I could come up with is an analogy to a person who must do a medical treatment even though there are terrible side effects. Could be from radiation, could be from chemotherapy, from some very potent drug. And you say, look, I took this medication to save my life. That's a good thing. Why am I plagued with this side effect and that side effect? And the answer is that's how it happens sometimes. I don't have a good answer. So Yaakov does end up with that blessing. Esav gets a different blessing from his father. Esav hates Yaakov because of his perceived notion that Yaakov has stolen his birthright as well as his blessing. And the words are very similar, Bechora and Baracha. And plans to kill him after his father Yitzchak is dead. Rivka finds out about that plan. And again, we're not sure how, but maybe guided by Ruach HaKodesh. And she suggests to Yitzchak that they send Yaakov away to her hometown to find a wife there because she can't stand the local population of women. Won't go into that. Yitzchak agrees, and Yitzchak gives Yaakov, conscious that he is Yaakov, the blessing of Avraham, which was given to him, showing the continuity of Avraham to Yitzchak to Yaakov, and from there to the tribes and to all of Israel. So the question, did Yitzchak know what was happening when he was being deceived or not? Some say yes, some say no. Some say that even if he didn't know at the beginning, he confirmed the blessing by not being angry with what happened, but by giving an additional blessing to Yaakov. The nagging question that remains is, why did it have to be done this way? And I personally don't have a good answer on that yet. If I ever get one, I'll let you know. So let's do it like this. Let me say to you now, Chodesh Tov, because that's today, and you might be listening to this after Rosh Chodesh already, but Chodesh Tov is a blessing for the whole month. Shabbat Shalom. And, as I like to finish with, the word Lehishtameah, which is the auditory version of Lehitraot, Lehishtameah. And then I will play a track of the words V'yiten Lecha Elokim, which was the blessing that Yitzchak gave to Avraham. Okay, so we'll do it like that. And I'll say it again. Chodesh Tov, Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameah.
Tein lecha lecha Elokim, minta la shamayim, u'mishmah miyaharet, ve'erotah gare ve'vesirosh. Tein lecha lecha Elokim, minta la shamayim, u'mishmah miyaharet, ve'erotah gare ve'vesirosh. Tein lecha lecha Elokim. Vita la shamayim, u'mishma miyaharet, ve'roda gan ve'vesirosh. Ay, 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 singi telecha, Elokim. Vita la shamayim, u'mishma miyaharet, ve'roda gan ve'vesirosh. Ay, 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 singi telecha. Tein lecha lecha Elokim,
מבעל השמיים ונשמע מהארץ ורובדה גם ובסיר ראש תהי לך לך אלוקים מבעל השמיים ונשמע מהארץ ורובדה גם ובסיר ראש תהי לך לך אלוקים מבעל השמיים ונשמע מהארץ ורודה גם ובסיר ראש
אהי,
אהי, אהי, אהי, אהי והיא תלך
אלוקים
מאיתה
לשמיים
ונשמע מהארץ
ורודה
גם ובסיר ראש
אהי, 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 אהי
והיא תלך
אלוקים
מאיתה
לשמיים
ומשמע הנייר ורובד אגם ובסירוש ייתן לך לך
האלוקים
ביותה
לשמיים
ומשמע הנייר ורובד אגם ובסירוש ותן לך לך אלוקים מיתה לשמיים ומשמע מיירת ורודה גם ובסיר ראש ותן לך לך אלוקים מיתה לשמיים ומשמע מיירת ורודה גם ובסיר ראש ותן לך לך
אלוקים
ביתה על
השמיים
ונשמע
מיירת
ורודה גם ובסיר ראש
אהי, 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 אהי
ייתן לך
אלוקים
ביתה על
השמיים
ונשמע
מיירת
ורודה גם ובסיר ראש
אהי, 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 אהי
ייתן לך ומשמע
מיירת
ורודת גם בבסיר ראש ייתן לך לך
אלוקים
ייתן לך
לשמיים
ומשמע מיירת